It's a case so stunning.
So controversial.
It became a major cause célèbre.
Hard to believe it was 20 years ago. The case was a media obsession, but it was never solved.
A Minnesota family experiencing both heartache and closure today. Nearly 27 years after his abduction, remains have been found.
This is Spin Talks. True crime stories.
Spin 1038, you're welcome back to Spin Talk, and it's time for some true crime stories. It's been a while since Gordon Rochford from Those Conspiracy Guys has been in studio. I'm excited with what he's got for us today. Hi, Gordon.
Hi.
This is one of my faves.
It's not a super happy one, but very apt for the media that's out there at the moment and the Halloween that's coming.
Absolutely. If you're into true crime and you're into gruesome death and murder, but a few laughs thrown in there as well, John Wayne Gacy. I'm so excited.
Yeah, he is a clown. The murder clown.
The murder clown. Like, if you're afraid of it, tune out now. This is your worst nightmare.
It seems to be a really popular phobia, but fear of clowns. And I think before this, really, like, nobody was really afraid of clowns. I think John Wayne Gacy laid the standard of fear for clowns, the same as the Ouija board wasn't really a conduit for the devil until 1973, until The Exorcist.
And is it true? Now, sorry if I'm skipping ahead, but John Wayne Gacy's clown makeup was the scariest clown makeup ever.
It depends, you see. When people look at John Wayne Gacy's face, you can see, like, you know, the rape and murder of, you know, almost 100 young boys, and you're kind of going, oh, clown. Like, it's an associated fear. He had, like, smiley little side swipes, and this is before, like, the Joker from Batman as well. So, I mean, as a clown, probably not great, but...
Okay, back to the start, though. John Wayne Gacy, let's go.
He was born in 1942, and he has 33 confirmed kills. So this is, like, the highest in U.S. criminal history, the highest amount of convicted murders, second only in confessions to Ted Bundy, who confessed to 36 but was convicted for 30 only. And he was, like, a stand-up guy. He was married twice. He had two kids. His second marriage, he had two kids adopted into the marriage. He ran a chain of KFCs. He then ran a building and contracting firm. He was in local politics. He was a community man. And he was known around the neighborhood as, like, oh, there's old John. How's it going, John? And then in his spare time, obviously, he would, you know, pick up runaways and strays and young 17, 18-year-old boys and chloroform them and bring them home to his house and then, like, rape and kill and then bury them in the basement. So, I mean, swings and roundabouts.
Double life.
Yeah,
absolutely. Double life. So was there any indication in his early life that he was a murderer?
Well, he had a really stern father, as is usually the case. He had, like, a very abusive home life. His dad was an alcoholic. He beat the kids and the mother. He had a sister as well who was, you know, possibly abused as well. And he gave loads and loads of interviews after his incarceration. So when he was arrested, he spent 13 years on death row waiting for his execution. And that whole time he was, like, changing his story, asking people to come in, asking, like, Dateline to come in and, like, doing big long interviews, and he'd tell all his whole story. So he said the only reason I was doing any of this was to seek my father's approval, you know, later on in life.
Sure.
And he moved from Las Vegas to Chicago to Iowa, and he kind of moved around, and there was a lot of, I guess, like, disparate separation, like loneliness, and he wasn't really into, like, sex with women, and I think he was maybe, like, a closeted homosexual who basically had, like, a very nasty childhood, and it just kind of all came out in the 60s as this murderous clown dude.
Okay, so before we get into the clown chats, when did the killing start, or did the clown dress up come before the killing?
Well, he started getting into weird stuff. So when he was a young guy, he got a job as a mortuary assistant in Chicago, and he used to sleep...
Sure, that's a normal first job.
He used to sleep in a cot, not a baby's cot, like, wouldn't that be weird, but in, like, a temporary bed at the back of the embalming room in the mortuary. And then sometimes at night, if there was, like, you know, a good-looking corpse, he'd creep out, have a little wander, and he used to get into the coffins or get into the bed, the metal bed, beside young dead boys. And after doing that a few times, he's like, geez, I need to get a hold of myself. And he basically went back home and enrolled in business school and said, like, yeah, you know, I mean, we all change our minds. Like, it's like the CAO, you're filling it out and then you're in college and like, oh, I hate this. Do you know? He just bailed out before Christmas in first year of you know, sleeping beside dead kids' bodies and getting sexual gratification from it. But he ended up going back and he got married, he got engaged, he got married to this girl, and then the girl's father, so his father-in-law, saw some promise in him after he graduated from business school and said, here, you can be the manager of these three KFCs that I own the franchise of. And he was getting, in today's money, I think it was $16,000 then, which in today's money is like $100,000. So it was like a good wedge for early 60s. So he had enough money to be like entertaining, being a bit flahoolocked, helping out in the community. He was classified as a rich dude, so he got into democratic politics and he was a man about town with rich people. But he wasn't a genius like a lot of these guys we talk about on this show. He wasn't a genius. He did an IQ test. It was 118. Like, he wasn't special. Anyone out there has 118 IQ, you know, you're not that special. But this guy ended up getting into like the highest honor in these kind of, what would you call them, clandestine organizations like Freemasonry, or these ones were called the JCs.
Okay.
And they were like a group of businessmen, and he got up to the top of those and he was honored by them in Chicago. And he ended up inculcating himself into these dodgy situations and these dodgy parties. So it seemed on the outside that these JCs were like, you know, respected businessmen who had lots of money, and he was one of them. But it turned out that it was like kind of a front for wife swapping, prostitution, like hardcore pornography, creating and consuming. And he attended these parties on his own, left his wife kind of out of it, and she ended up like divorcing him and stuff because of it. But this was, he was always managing to find his little, you know, salacious pastime.
When did the clown stuff start? And what was his name as the clown again?
Pogo the clown.
When did that start?
Well, this was going along all the way. He ended up getting into a group called the Jolly Jokers. And these guys,
they were clowns too.
They were
all clowns
together, but none of them were all murderers. And they were like a children's entertainment group who did parties, and he performed tricks, and he did, you know, the never-ending tissue and, you know, the water and the flower stuff. And then obviously like the raping and murdering of young boys later, but not of these kids at the parties, which is the creepiest thing, because he was real nice to them. But it's just,
he was a good clown.
Yeah, I mean, as good as like a murdering, raping clown can be. I mean, swings and roundabouts again. But and he used to play on swings and roundabouts. But the kids that were at these parties were too young for him. He wanted them 16, 17. And what he used to do was he would drive around in what was called the cruising years. So this between 1976 and 1978, which is what he did most of his work for, right? He used to cruise around and he put extra lights in his car and pretend to be the police and pull these lads over and take them in and chloroform them and make them tie their own hands behind their back and then bring them back to his house and do whatever. But because of these crimes, he was like arrested and convicted a bunch of times, but was let go.
Okay, and again, like we've spoken about so many times, the justice system has let down so many of these victims.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, he was caught like almost straight away. He had a company, a construction company, and it was called PCM. And those guys, he employed there. So let's say you're 18, you're like, I'm going to work, ma. And then you go out to work and then your boss is like, here, come here, can you lift that box of, you know, plates into my house, or the box of tiles? And he gets back to the house and then chloroform, just
disappear.
Does this cloth smell like chloroform to you? And then, you know, you're gone, right? And one of them was particularly, I guess, noticeable to the police. It was the attack on Donald Voorhees, and he was basically attacked by one of his co-workers, Russell Schroeder, who was instructed by Gacy to mace him and then tie him up. And then he forced the two boys to have sex with each other, and then he had sex with them. And then when that was reported, he went to jail, but he was given a 10-year sentence, right, for sodomy and other stuff. And he only served less than 18 months of it, with 12 months probation.
Wow.
Because when he got into prison, he was such a model prisoner. He made like a mini golf course in the prison yard, and he was real good, you know, like in the library and stuff, and doing obviously the clown tricks and stuff. Like, who doesn't, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're in prison, you still want a bit of crack. And he was doing all that stuff, and he ended up getting let out after 18 months.
Wow.
Only to then go off and kill dozens and dozens and dozens of other young men. But there is a bigger picture. Like, Gacy was adamant that there was more people involved in the murders than just him. And when he attempted to get away with the crimes by reasons of insanity in his early conviction, which was obviously thrown out because, you know, if they let everybody away, one of the prosecutors said, if we find him innocent, by reason of insanity, he'll be out on the streets again and he'll commit more murders. And the jury just went, okay, yeah, no, he's going to jail. But Robert Ressler, who was the investigating agent from the FBI, believed Gacy but had no concrete evidence that anybody else committed the crimes. And the way the conspiracy goes now is with stuff like the Franklin Credit Union scandal and the Johnny Gosch case that we talked about a couple of months ago, and all these kids going missing, these young dudes going missing. It looks like Gacy was kind of the figurehead for a group of dudes involved in the likes of the JCs, which was like prostitution and maybe even human trafficking and you know, sex crime and murder. All these guys from the PDM, his construction company, all had keys to the house. And this one guy, Philip Pask, who was a known associate of John Norman, who operated a nationwide, who was like convicted and sentenced, who operated a nationwide sex trafficking ring that's now called the Delta Project, which is like, you know, obvious evidence now. All of this stuff was all happening at the time in Chicago when John Wayne Gacy was doing these crimes. And Gacy later said that 16 of the murders happened when he wasn't even in Chicago, and he could prove that he wasn't in Chicago.
Wow, that is fascinating.
So this stuff is all only happening now in the last little while. Like, they're still finding victims through DNA. There was victim number 24, because all the lads in the basement were just numbers until they had names, you know. And it was he was found in July this year. Jason Byron Hackinson, who was 17 at the time of his disappearance, his DNA and his parents have now been able to identify body number 24 as Jason. Like, it's still a case that's still alive. And it's scaring the life out of loads of people with movies like It or what's your man's name? Flopsy or something from American Horror Story.
Oh,
what's
yeah.
The guy, the clown with the half the face who shot himself with a shotgun. Like, it's so creepy. Mm-hmm. And stuff like in Zombieland, like as if zombies weren't scary enough. At the end, Jesse's character has a fear of clowns, and your man is standing at the bottom of the Ferris wheel like a zombie clown. Like, it does.
I'm not able for zombies.
Clowns have that thing though, that like, oh, a childhood, oh wait, no, like it's a weird connection with like the fears of your childhood, I guess.
And we can thank John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah, thanks, John Wayne Gacy.
Gordon, always brilliant to have you on Spin
Talk. Much.
Thank you so much. Such an interesting one, and I hope you come back to see us again soon.
Well, we will have an episode of this up on Those Conspiracy Guys, so you can check out our podcast, thoseconspiracyguys.com. We're top 100 in the US
Amazing.
At the moment. Yeah. And we're in the Irish charts too. We're flying up, and if you want to go over to the website or check us out on Facebook or Twitter, we get back to you. You can get into the show.
Brilliant. Gordon Ratcher, thank you so much.
Thanks, Lauren.